Welcome back, everybody. Tom McNew here on the Armor of God Catholic Radio with School Spirit as we're continuing our conversation on smart families. For those of you that remember last week, we introduced the program, and Miss Hillary and Miss Sally are back with us again this week. We're going to dig into some science and explain the why behind this whole smart families concept and program. And again, as I said last week, for many of us, this is going to be some information and some science that we really haven't touched on in the last 20, 30, maybe 40 years. But I think it's going to and really kind of open our eyes as to where we are in 2025 with our brains and with the things that are in our hands. So with that, ladies, I'll let you just kick it off and let's dive into this neuroscience.
Quickly, just so those who may or may not have heard last week, that the neuroscience we're about to talk about is the impact of a developing brain due to technology overuse specifically. You know, there's so much to neuroscience. And the reason why we want to walk through this with y'all is, you know, parents will benefit so much from hearing the research about why we need to pay attention to how children are interacting specifically with smartphones and technology. And so this is where Sally really kind of shines. She's going to break through some of that tough technical stuff. I want to just give a full picture as to why we're walking through this exciting topic.
Kind of like I mentioned in our previous conversation, I'd been having observations in my classroom, but it really was this neuroscience piece when Dr. Collier came, and it really gave an overview similar to what I'm going to give you today that was so compelling. And I felt like this was my light bulb moment, that this was the missing piece to everything that I was seeing. And it's also just so incredibly interesting. I feel like maybe I have missed a career opportunity because now I want to be a neuroscientist. So as a little bit of, just to lay the foundation, so the brain develops from the bottom to the top and back to the front. So it develops at all different stages. And many years ago, researchers used to believe that anything that a child experienced between the ages of around birth and three was going to hardwire that child's brain development for the rest of their lives. So, for example, if a child had maybe experienced some developmental trauma, that they were going to have some challenges that would pop up, you know, for the rest of their life. And then a few years ago, UNICEF were part of an incredible research study that discovered that actually, between the ages of around 9 and 14, the brain actually went through and initiated another intense season of learning and brain development. And this was where we got some kind of structural remodeling and neural reconfiguration that was very unique to this time frame. And so researchers call this the second window opportunity. So the reason why I'm sharing this with you as my kind of opening is because between the ages of 9 and 14, so this second window of opportunity, which we now know from science is this critical piece of brain development, is when parents would feel most obligated to hand their child a smartphone. So in this window is where we need to be protecting, preserving, providing opportunities for children to experience good, wholesome, positive activities. But in reality, what's been happening is a child has been given this device and this all access to the internet, which provides a very different landscape for them than what parents want to have. So now a little bit more of a closer view of two really very key components for the brain when we think about adolescent brain development, and specifically in this window of opportunity. So we have a part of the brain called the temporal lobes, and within the temporal lobes we have what is our limbic system, which I know, Tom, you had said prior to this conversation, oh, I haven't heard this since high school. And I hadn't heard this even through my teaching career. Nobody had really ever led me to this place of the neuroscience with children's growing and developing brains. So this limbic system is the part of the brain that is fully developed by age 12. And the limbic system is the part that gravitates towards and just really wants to engage in very exhilarating, you know, fun, exciting activities. And so for a teenager, what that means, or this adolescent, is if something looks good, feels good, smells good, tastes good, all of your friends are doing it, the limbic system part of the brain says, do it. You do it too. What that can look like is just start a group chat without your friend in it. You know, that would be really fun. And this is we hear type, this is a limbic system move, you know, that these adolescents will engage in, or I'll just say that in the group chat, or I'll just post that on social media. It's almost like our go pedal or our accelerator pedal. And it does not really do a lot of thinking around consequences. And so, you know, I often say I have two fully developed limbic systems living at home with me and my boys right now, and they will do and say things. And I will look at these sweet children and I'll say, "What were you thinking?" And their simple response will be, "I don't know. I don't know. You know, everybody was doing it. It looked great. I did it as well." Now, why that's really important to know is because there's another part of the brain that is responsible for thinking about the consequences, and that is known as our prefrontal cortex, or sometimes people hear me say the frontal lobe. Now, if our limbic system is this, you know, accelerator pedal, go, 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 do it, this is fun, this is exciting. This frontal lobe found, you know, at the front of the brain above our eyebrows, this is the part of the brain that acts like our brakes. This is the part that says, hang on, slow down. You know, if we do this, are we going to get in trouble? You know, am I going to walk in school tomorrow and none of my friends are going to be speaking to me? And what was incredible for me to find out was that this part of the brain is not fully developed until age 25. So that same 15-year-old that I have in my house who thinks he knows everything and thinks that I know nothing has a whole decade left of brain development left to go until his brain is fully developed. So, in our student presentations, because we love to share this with our students about, you know, where they are with their brain development, we share that until your brains are fully developed, until you have a fully developed prefrontal cortex, your teachers and your parents and the adults in your life who love you have to be that part of your brain for you, which means that they may have to make decisions for you and choices that don't feel quite so fun. And that's where we see. We call it a developmental mismatch. It's this kind of really intense season of just conflict and arguing. You know, it's the, you know, it's bedtime. It's time to put, we need you to stop playing on your video games. But no, everybody else is still playing the video games. And that back into the negotiation. What you're seeing is this developmental mismatch. It's this highly sensitized go pedal in your child's brain, kind of coming up against your adult prefrontal cortex, who knows that they know to need to go to sleep, who knows that they need rest, who knows that they've spent maybe too long on looking at a screen. So these two pieces are critical when we think about this adolescent brain development, and really a great tool that we can incorporate into family life, into classroom conversations. Because when children understand where they are developmentally, it helps to offset a lot of shame. Because when those students maybe make those poor choices, get themselves in a situation, and we hear this through conversations, we hear about the child that shared a message that had something in, you know, that contained something that really was inappropriate, and then it gets found out, and the shame that washes over them. Well, when they know that we understand that they're in this season of brain development, that means that they are more likely to make these mistakes. It helps the adults in their life to meet them and give them that grace and that mercy and walk alongside them and love them well. And that is the critical piece with that connection that helps children to regulate behaviors and to kind of pause before they do anything and access that frontal lobe and really consider, you know, should I really be doing this? So it's this, we feel this very strong messaging that we take to the entire community. Because when children know about their brains, it really does help them to not engage in risky behavior. It's, I mean, it's research-based. We've seen the science, the research all says this as well. Now, if I can continue on my
Yeah,
little
please. I'm
trajectory.
completely fascinated because I'm waiting for the other shoe to drop, which is, oh, by the way, their hormones are raging at this point.
Absolutely. Yes. You know, and again, you know, this is my life right now. I am right in this. And it really does help me to give my children grace in these moments where I just feel so, overwhelmed myself with some of the behaviors that I see. It really just helps me regulate. It helps them regulate. We have some great conversations. Also, within this second window of opportunity, we see some really interesting things happen when it comes to a concept which you listeners may be familiar with, which is called use it or lose it. So this principle is something called synaptic pruning. And this is very, it's not unique to adolescents, but during adolescence is when we see this use it or lose it principle really come online. And it's, a really intense kind of brain reconfiguration. So when I was teaching young children, I would often say, I see these students, they're like sponges. They just learn everything. And that's exactly how God designed their brains. These young children will learn a little about a lot. And so when we look at brain scans, what we see are images of these brain cells, these neurons, connecting to the other brain cells through these beautiful tree-like branches that we call dendrites. Okay, so these are the connections that we see between the brain cells. And these children are learning skills and they're learning so much about the world. And so these scans will show us these incredible images of all of these dendrites. Think of like a forest full of trees, just these branches reaching out everywhere. But when a child becomes an adolescent, they start to really evaluate and reflect on what things do I find interesting? What are the things I'm good at? Maybe I was playing three sports when I was in elementary school, but now at middle school, I love baseball. Well, here's something amazing about the brain. It wants to be efficient. And so now what the brain will do during adolescence is it's going to really look and think, okay, which are these connections that I'm using often? I want to strengthen those connections. So those activities, those skills I'm doing a lot of, I'm going to strengthen them so I'm efficient, very streamlined, they become very habitual. But then those skills and activities I'm not doing a lot of, now I'm going to prune those connections away because I'm not using them. I want to become efficient, like I'm going to take those connections away. This is the use it or lose it principle. And so when we think of this in relation to technology, what was kind of a scary piece for me to learn was that the brain can't differentiate between the kinds of activities. So if a child is going home and spending 2 to 3 hours watching YouTube videos after school, or spending the weekend spending hours, scrolling on a TikTok video, guess which connections are going to get strengthened in that child's brain? Those ones, the ones for watching YouTube. Now, I know parents, when we have these conversations, they don't want those. They're not the brain cell. They're not the ones that parents want to, they want them to have these great skills of being organized or the sports or the languages or, all of these skills. The brain can't differentiate in the same way. And so this use it or lose it principle, we continue this throughout our lives. We have neuroplasticity, which means our brains are able to reconfigure itself, until the end of our lives. But this window is critical when we see this piece happen. And then finally, the other little kind of jigsaw piece when it comes to an adolescent brain is this concept of dopamine. So dopamine is a naturally occurring neurotransmitter in our brains that many of us hear, it's the pleasure chemical, the reward chemical, the feel-good chemical. And I often begin a conversation when I go and speak to parents and students at our schools and say, sometimes we can believe that this idea of dopamine is bad, but God created our brains with dopamine. That was an intentional piece of God's creation because we can feel really healthy levels of dopamine through doing activities like going for dinner with your friends, scoring the goal in a soccer tournament. Smiling is known to raise dopamine levels. These are great, healthy ways. But dopamine has another really important job. It does signal like this feels good, but it also has a key piece that says it's a motivator. You want to keep doing the thing that feels good. So the brain says, okay, I don't like this feels good. I'm going to keep doing it. It's kind of part of our like survival mechanism within our brains. Now, if I can bring it back to teenagers and students and our children, there are two unique pieces about an adolescent brain. Number one, they actually produce more dopamine than an adult brain. And two, they are more sensitive to dopamine than an adult brain. So a
Interesting.
child on YouTube, on TikTok, on Snapchat, fill in the blank, any of these platforms, they are neurologically going to experience these apps and platforms differently to adults. So if I'm scrolling on videos, I'm not going to feel that in the same way that a 14-year-old is going to feel that. And this was a really fascinating discovery for scientists to discover that adolescents have this unique kind of component to their brain. And so, with that neuroscience and everything that we have learned about this adolescent period, here at Smart Families, we really felt like we wanted to go in and talk to the students, one, about these pieces, but two, really explain to them, do you know all of these apps and all of these games that you play have all been created underpinned with this neuroscience? These scientists, out in California, these tech developers, they have been working in partnership with the neuroscience for so many years to really find which features in the games and the apps are the most addictive features. And then what they do is they intentionally build these apps and platforms using those, scientifically researched features. There was an organization that was part of this movement that sold all of the scientific data on which are the most, which are the features that raise dopamine levels the highest. And then they gave it straight to Silicon Valley and said, these are the ways that you can make these children compulsive users of this technology. And, I just think from morally, it's terrifying that nobody has any idea that this is how these apps were created.
You could make the argument that some unfettered evil involved in selling off all this greed and the selling off all this this information to these people that are just developing these apps that are really kind of exploiting the sensitive nature of all of our brains, but especially our young people's brains.
We
Can
talk about how God
go ahead.
created technology for good. You have so many wonderful things that come along with this new technology. But as we know, the devil will come in and it will twist it. And that's an example that we often share to kids so they get that visual of exactly what we feel has been happening.
Yeah, so one of the things that I found most interesting in the presentation that we were a part of was this idea of the Skinner box. Can
Yes.
you kind of walk us through how because I that was new to me. I'd heard of the concept of a Skinner box before, but how that relates to app development.
Yeah. So, like I said, a lot of the app developers have been using neuroscience, but not just the neuroscience. They've been using decades of psychology research to incorporate into this development. So I love science and I love psychology. I love human behavior. So I spend a lot of my time researching. And so I included this piece in our presentations that we really outlined in our initial launch within a school because it is so compelling. So B.F. Skinner is a well-known psychologist who really was studying behavior change. And there are lots of different ways that we can modify behavior. So, one way, for example, and I was just listening to a podcast this morning on this, was Pavlov's dogs. So, there's one way, they would ring the bell and the dog would salivate. Okay, that's a way that we can change behavior. But Skinner was specifically interested in looking at something called operant behavior conditioning. And this is how we can modify and change behavior by using rewards. So, he created something that is known as a Skinner box. So it's a little box. Within the box is a lever, and the little mouse inside the box was trained to press this little lever, and it would be rewarded by having some food. And so over time, the mouse would be conditioned, press the lever, I would get some food, and that was its kind of expected reward. So there's also dopamine in here, it's anticipating this reward. But what Skinner wanted to do was just kind of go one step beyond that and said, well, what would happen if we didn't reward the mouse when it was anticipating a reward. So in the next step stage of the study, what they would do, the mouse would press this lever, but then it wouldn't get a reward. Now you can imagine what this mouse would do. Now it had been conditioned and primed to anticipate a reward. So think of it kind of like frantically, like desperately pressing the lever to try and get the reward it was expecting. So this is known as variable reward, where you don't reward somebody on schedule. And so the neuroscience piece and all that dopamine that I just kind of gave you an outline about, with the psychology and what Skinner had been looking at, and many, many other psychologists and researchers have replicated this study, became the social media apps that we have around today. And so if I can give you an example of one of them, we share this with the students and the parents, and I tell them about Instagram. So Instagram are one of the platforms who will utilize this variable reward. And so imagine for a second that I am a 13-year-old girl. I have been given Instagram and I decide I'm going to upload a picture of myself on Instagram. So I take a photograph, I think I look really cute, like I think my hair looks great. I put this picture on. And so what starts to happen is that my brain starts to anticipate that I might get some likes or maybe even some comments on my picture. So the dopamine in my brain already starts to increase, anticipating that I'm going to get this reward. Now, I go back into Instagram a short time later, and I am so disappointed to see that nobody's liked my photograph. So I start to feel disappointed. That dopamine that was starting to increase now starts to decrease. I go in a dopamine deficit because I'm feeling really disappointed. Now, again, think about that little mouse. It's just pressed that lever. It's pressing it. It's pressing it. There's no food coming. Okay. Now, as a 13-year-old girl, we know we hear so much in the research about mental health, anxiety, depression. Now that 13-year-old girl is starting to think, well, what was wrong with my picture? Maybe my hair didn't look as nice as it looked, and maybe I didn't look like other people who posted similar pictures. Now I've been thrust into this world of comparison where I'm now really forgetting the God-given value that I have. And now I'm placing all my value in how many likes that I have, or now these comments that I don't have. Now, here's what's actually happening. So Instagram, they've known all about variable reward. They know all about dopamine. Like I said, everything they create has been built on all of this foundation. They are one of the platforms that are known to actually hide and withhold likes intentionally. They want people to feel disappointed because if they were giving you likes in real time, you would only be getting minimal dopamine spikes. But by holding on to all of the likes and all of the comments, what they'll do is they will instead give them to you in one giant hit. So they'll hold them and then give them when they want you to give them to you, because that is going to increase your dopamine level far higher than it would have done had you just been seeing them, every few minutes. And what does dopamine say? It says, this feels good. Keep doing it. So now you've got this teenage girl or any other teenager who's compulsively checking. They're compulsively checking that lever, like, where's my reward? Where's my reward? Going back into these apps in order to get that dopamine, that feel good kind of chemical in their brains. And they know this. This is why these platforms have been linked to increased levels of anxiety and depression. It's for a reason. I mean, they are creating that dynamic because they are actually intentionally making people feel disappointed. And this is just one of the many platforms that we hear about. But again, what is so, I think one of my favorite parts of our role here at Smart Families is when we tell the students this, when we go in and we say, this is what they're actually doing, these students are outraged. These children are like, what? We had no idea. They don't want to be part of this game. We have students that turn around and say, we are either coming off this, or now that we know about this, we're going to look for it, or we're going to put accountability features on each other's phones so that, we reduce the amount of time. We really want children to critically analyze. It's a big part of our digital literacy. We want them to critically analyze the way that they engage with technology because there are so many features in there that when they know about, they're like, oh, I've seen that happen. Oh, is that why that happens? They say all of these things to us. We're like, yes, These were all intentionally placed there to keep you coming back for more. The streak feature is another example. You know, the streak feature, this is where when a child interacts with an app, they get rewarded like a little virtual dopamine high five for being in that app. So when they send something, it will, you know, it kind of gives them a number. So you can, for Snapchat, for example, is a snap streak. And so every time a child engages with this app, it will give them this dopamine high five, and then it continues on and on and on. What it's basically doing is priming that child to keep coming back into the app, because as long as they're in that app, they're making them all the money. So that's all they need to do. They just need their eyes on the screen. And so we have had students who have actually withdrawn from confirmation classes because it meant they couldn't keep a Snapchat streak going, or they will pay somebody to keep their Snapchat streak going if they have their phone taken away. And so for our adult brains, we laugh. We're like, this is absurd. But for their
Baffling.
teeny brains, who have been so primed with this dopamine, a streak feature is taken straight from gambling. It's a gambling tactic. It's,
Yeah.
you know, these
Pull
children
on that
don't know this
lever.
is happening. Yeah, they don't know what's happening to them. And so for them, it's real. It's terrifying, the thought of losing this. They assign so much of their worth to maintaining this. So we want to just go in and help, one, just cast light on these very manipulative features that they are being kind of sucked into. And then also helping them with that, you know, giving them that grace and saying, you didn't know any different. This is why we know that teenagers are, you know, up till 2, 3 a.m. Many of our high schoolers will say, you know, we're up till 2, 3 a.m. just watching TikTok videos. And we say, well, how does that make you feel? Dreadful. They say, we feel terrible. We don't feel good. And we dislike this for ourselves. But it's a compulsive, you know, they've been drawn into this like dopamine loop, this doom scrolling is another word for it. And they get stuck there. And they often, when a parent intervenes, they are so grateful. They are like, we needed a parent to step in because we did not know how to get ourselves out of this. And Hillary, I know Hillary has an incredible niece who has been fundamental in, you know, just me seeing it from a high school perspective. And Hillary's niece shared the same thing, that it took her dad actually putting in that boundary and severing her relationship with this device for her to really start that change.
And I'm going to interject here because we're running out of time, and I mean, I need to go back and listen to this again, because you know, the analogy of the car, the gas pedal and the brake pedal, I think is perfect, and we've built this engine now, so I think what we need to do is let's come back next week and let's talk about how we build the brake. And because I think that's really where the beauty of the Smart Families program exists. And I am interested to hear, Miss Hillary, about your niece and that story. So we'll pick it up next week, folks, here with Miss Hillary and Miss Sally in our Smart Families conversation. Real quick, Miss Hillary, if people want to find out more, how can they get connected with your organization?
One of our favorite things is it's on our website, www.smart-families.org. Sign up for our newsletter, which sounds so basic and generic these days. But most importantly, we host a series of online talks throughout the year. And that is a wonderful way for us to be able to break down so much of this content in a conversation with parents. So please attend our online talks. We're about to put on our website in the next week or so, our upcoming six talks that we're going to have this school year. So check us out.
Are those talks cataloged that people can go back
Correct.
and listen? Okay, great, great,
Yep.
great.
There
We'll
are
make a
presentations tab.
yeah. We'll put a link to our show notes here for all that. And ladies, you can come back and talk to us some more next week then.
We would love that. Yeah.
All right, great. All right, folks. Thank you very much. We're gonna leave you with a little dopamine drop here as a teaser to come back next week and find out more about Smart Families right here on the Armor at God Catholic Radio Network.